And then I wanted to also, I wanted to ask about agriculture pre-European, and you talked some about it, talking about the terraces. If you want to talk a little bit more about it briefly, or not, you just expressed not really wanting to talk too much about agriculture. So if you want to, or you know.
I love agriculture, but I don't know if I don't know how much longer I want to talk.
Well, I agree with you. The thing is that as we said before we started the interview, most of what I know about this is from secondary sources, and I have looked at some of the early. Actually, I went to Spain to see what the Spanish were saying about what they found here, to see if how much copying was going on and how much sharing was going on. And I was only interested in the records where people were talking, where the chroniclers were talking about the conditions they found in the pueblos when they arrived here. So I was interested in the land that they touched. When the Spanish came, did they go to Yungay and then spread out from there, or did they stay basically in San Gabriel area and then go down to Santa Fe? And if they went out, what did they do? And they had to do some farming later on when they came back with De Vargas, because things were settling down a bit here. But originally, they forced the Pueblo people to bring them their goods from the fields. They were too lazy to work or something, or maybe they were afraid to work out there. I have no idea about that. I never got that. But so many bushels of corn were brought in, or so many blankets were brought in, and because these were the taxes that the Spanish were laying on the people. So when we talk about the changes happening with World War II, we skip a whole bunch of stuff that's been going on. But each time, it seems as though when we look at the history of Pueblo rise and fall in agricultural activities or successes and failures. I mean, there was a time of starvation that went early on here too when the Spanish came, and then in the early 1900s when the flu came through here. I mean, there's so many other things that impacted, but if you look back at the archaeological record, as best they can tell, those kinds of rise and fall of population density and management of the land to produce food and scarcity and decimation by disease really is going on before the Spanish arrived. Not so much the decimation of disease really is hard when the Spanish and then the other Europeans come in. But in terms of looking at the ground myself, as I said a while ago, I really have to look to be sure. I'm talking about sand and clay and but people who have been doing this for generations and learned from their great grandfathers and can look and can touch the soil and say, oh, this has this in it and so on. Well, I'll never get to that point. That's okay. I can get somebody who's an expert to come tell me. But the whole idea about returning to this kind of lifestyle that's going on around the world right now and that's making people curious about how the Pueblos made it, for example, and what the value of the landscape is, of the land is to the Pueblos, and water, because water and land are hand in hand now for sure, because of scarcity of both. What was the question?
Pre-European.
Okay, well, see, there were droughts and there was abundance, and there were droughts and there was abundance. There was starvation and there was population explosion this whole area.
So you had evidence of storage.
Right. Even in the most primitive areas, I mean, the most distant away from the heart of the Pueblos.
Storage towers.
Yeah.
Storage rooms for... They knew about drought, and so what they would do is they would save for the times when things were lean.
So some of the places they're set apart from the Pueblos these days are being interpreted. I mean, they look like they're nothing there, just something that was thrown up real quick. But now it looks like this may have been an outpost. This might have been an outpost storage area, rather than a place to keep the enemy from coming in. But so that when the enemy came in, and to steal the food.
And that's what makes me sad is thinking about what my Pueblo ancestors must have gone through when they had their extra storage bins.
Yeah.
They had these values that just did them in because they had this real valuing of sharing.
Yeah.
So when these newcomers in the mid-1500s came in, they were just trying to help out because these newcomers, the Spaniards, were needing some food. But the newcomers, the Spanish newcomers, took advantage of my Pueblo ancestors and took what they could and more because they felt like they could take it and they deserved it. At the expense of my Pueblo ancestors who knew how to live off the land, who knew about good times and lean times, and they had built in a kind of system that allowed for storage bins for those lean years. And I just feel almost right now what they must have gone through when it was all taken away.
Well,
and there was hardly anything left for them.
I know you have compassion for the Hispanos around here and who are here now. And what happened in the 1800s, early 1900s, when the United States began to say, no, you can't take your cattle there, no, you can't farm there anymore, to everybody. And so that story comes through the Hispanos who have been working the land and then have that taken away from them. So it creates, it's again this capitalistic enterprise model that says, put them against each other and then we'll be the winners. You know what I'm talking about? Be sure that you take enough from the Hispanos, be sure you take enough from the Pueblos, because the Anglos are going to come in. The United States government's going to come in. And so we talk about that sometimes. Set up the system so that big business can win in the long run.
Are you all doing okay for time, or do you have a meeting? Don't you?
We're getting there. The lady is.
She can't go to 12, but we ought to think about what we're gonna do before we go. So
yeah, okay. And can I ask one more question?
Sure.
I'm asking everyone this. I'm asking if there is something that
sorry.
If there's something like an example that people have of the expression of the land through culture, and like I think of Cambalache, the trade fair, or another man that I spoke with who's a chili farmer said, you know, when you go to lunch and you have the choice between red and green chili, that's the land. And somebody else had, Danny Sam, who takes care of the buffaloes at Picuri, said, you know, we have the buffalo dance, but he would, you know, he didn't say anything else, but he just said that they have the buffalo dance. So I don't know if there's, is there anything that just either, you know, either in your own community or just in general for New Mexico, is there anything that y'all see as an expression of the land through?
Can I talk about songs?
Okay.
When you, when the people, well, let me start with the lullaby. A long time ago, I'm talking about the 1970s, the older women would sing lullabies to their children that would have something about the land in it and what was growing on the land and how that child was going to grow up to be like a particular plant or a particular flower or corn.
Finini
or
e amba ita, ita. Finini e amba ita. Yeah.
So you have that happening, and then you have the trees, the cottonwood trees, the pines, the little animals and the birds. Okay. And then time passed and the ones who knew those songs don't seem to be around anymore. And that's a big loss for me. Nobody seems to know those right now. That's one thing, but then that's a beginning. That's a beginning. I wanted to go from there to, then comes the great feast day, the green corn dance, or the yellow corn dance, and the songs talk about that. And then there are other songs where it's kind of like the men are just singing over and over again, look, the people of San Juan, Okewinge, are coming. They are coming again. They are coming from the east. They are coming from the south, the west, and the north. They are coming. They are coming here with us, with us. And over again. So songs are intended by the composer or by the tradition of passing on to keep reminding people that they are part of the process, they are part of the earth and everything around us. And the lucky child who gets to hear those songs and remember them so well that it helps form that consciousness about life, I think is so important, and it has to do with preservation of the language. And when you start losing the language or stop using the language, and the Hispanos know this too, you begin to change your view of the world if you're just using English. And so, from my point of view, without the language, things disappear. Without the indigenous language, things disappear.
Yeah, I like that. I like that as a response, Sue Ellen, because it reminds me of, you know, this, the very few verses that that my mother taught us, or she would sing, and you would hear it over and over again, and then it would become a part of your memory. And so, the verse that came to my mind as you were talking about language and about song, the verse "Finini e ambadit bita ita sajavi e ambadit a ita hu cheno hu cheno hu hu hu." And the verse talks about the dwarf corn and how when you're grinding them, and about how the grandchildren are also, you know, grinding, and they're grinding in this way, hu chano, hu chano, hu hu hu. I don't know how old that song is, but you know, if you got that old kind of dwarf corn from before my great grandmother's time, mm-hmm. I wonder if when we lose the language, as we're losing the language, and these kinds of verses are not being passed on, it stops at the end of my life. And how many other verses and how many songs will get stopped as lives end, and the hoot channel does not create that delight in the younger generations as it does in my mind as I'm saying it out loud.
The songs that refer to the heart of the pueblo are part of the anchoring of individuals in the community to their place of origin, so that people who go away may come back. If they hear that song often enough, they know that that's the center of the world, and at some point they have to get back to it. At least they try, and that's part of their journey. And that's reinforced by the various private and public performances that the Pueblos do to acknowledge this home spot. But it doesn't say that the hills around are not part of of the home too, because there's these layers, the distances to go out, and the poem.
Yeah. The poem, that the prayer that you're referring to is one of my more favorite prayers, and it's so beautiful. It's so short. It's so, yet so profound. Within and around these hills, within and around the mountains, your authority returns to you. Just so powerful, because in the Pueblo world, you've got your universe, and it's within the universe that your authority returns to you. Your authority to walk on your life's journey, your this journey that we are all individually have choices to do whatever choices we want to make.
Thank you. And if there's anything else that you want to say, feel free, but thank you so much.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm just doing that.
Choices. I didn't say that last one. I didn't say it right.
Yeah,
but it's okay. It's all right. Okay.